Welcome to the Mitch Hanks Show, originating four blocks from Wisconsin's capital. Mitch is the radio voice of uncommon sense. All sides of an argument are welcome here. Just be prepared to make one, as Mitch argues for truth, not victory. Politics, lifestyle, pop culture are all on the table. So get ready to participate on the Mitch Hanks Show.
Now, it looks like unless a federal court blocks it, Texas anti-sanctuary city law will go into effect Friday. According to the Texas Tribune, the law would forbid police chiefs, sheriffs, constables, and other jail administrators from preventing an officer to ask about a person's immigration status during an arrest or lawful detention, or from sharing that information with federal officials. ICE would also require that jail officials honor all requests from immigration and customs enforcement officials to help an inmate for possible deportation. Joining me is Ken Oliver Mendez on this. Hello, sir.
Hey, Mitch. Good to be with you. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, it's good to have you on the show. Now, this sounds like a court action to me. There'll be some injunction or some judge will intervene. Your thoughts?
Well, yeah, I mean, this law that goes into effect, it basically makes Texas a sanctuary-free state. It instructs the law enforcement authorities at all levels of Texas to cooperate. Right now, it's voluntary to cooperate. Some cities in Texas do not cooperate fully with federal immigration authorities. So the governor of Texas has said this has been thoroughly vetted, obviously, by his lawyers, and in fact it has, as you mentioned, an anti-discrimination clause. Law officials cannot consider race, color, or nationality when they're enforcing immigration laws. It's colorblind, as the law is. So it is being challenged, but it's basically just supporting law enforcement, the current laws on the books, and helping the federal authorities and local authorities cooperate as they should.
Now, it reminds me a little bit of Arizona, because in Arizona, the lawsuit originally from Janet Napolitano in Homeland Security against Arizona was saying you're swimming out of your lane. The feds enforce immigration law, and you should butt out. Isn't that really kind of what drove the saga there?
Yes, but also there has to be cooperation. You're not going to be going out, for example, the Texas authorities, no one should be going out strictly to enforce immigration law. But if someone is caught committing a crime, then authorities can cooperate
right,
and check their status.
Well, what if you have a taillight out? Because I've been stopped because I had a taillight out once. It was the day my mother died, and this cruiser has, like, Christmas tree lights. I was intimidated. But, he just says, you had a taillight. Grabbed my driver's license, did a check. Now, had I been undocumented, would they have found that my Social Security number was used, like, 12 other times and said, you got to come with me? How does this work?
That could happen. That's certainly, if you or I are here without authorization or in a country without authorization, we're not scot-free. No, we're not. We're subject to deportation still.
Well, but the country is kind of divided on that score, where a lot of people in this country think that we should only get rid of the undocumented people who commit felonies or violent crimes or sell drugs, and don't think we should go after people with a taillight out.
Right. That's true. There has to be priorities, and the priority are the violent criminals.
Yeah, and I'm curious, too, if you just crank up the deportations in a massive way, what happens? I mean, because there is no wall now. I mean, people, obviously the guy in San Fran came back five times and shot Kate Steinle in the pier. I mean, what are you going to do? You send them back, and then what happens? Oh, they come right back?
Well, Mitch, but the statistics are showing that morale is way up among the Border Patrol agents and the whole agency, that the amount of enforcement going on, they are catching and turning away.
Right, right.
So there is a incentive to enforcement when people see the laws being enforced and people aren't getting
through. Well, I know. They've cranked it up, and they're doing better at intercepting on the first level, but when you send them back, I see. So it's hard to get across because we've cranked up the enforcement. That's what you're saying, right?
Exactly.
What do you think? I mean, is that all we got to do? Is crank up the enforcement, or should we change our legal immigration laws and reconfigure the entire thing.
No, I do think we have to, you know, piece by piece. It has to start with enforcing the laws on the books, but that's what's going to come to a head next week with that piece of those kids that were brought here by their parents when they were right. They were small, and it wasn't their choice, but they're here. They've been growing up here. Will they be allowed to continue as they have been for the last 5 years or so? They're called the Dreamers, right? And so that deadline is September 5th, and the president's going to have to make a decision. I think there's talk here in Washington of trying to do some deal that if you give me the money for the wall, well, I'm willing to have a heart and be compassionate with this group and actually do something by law, not by executive orders that President Obama did.
Yes, and you know, whether perception or reality, I talked to my sister who teaches in Indiana, and she has children of undocumented parents, and they tell her they're afraid to go to Walmart on a Saturday. They're afraid to go to Walmart because they're afraid they might get picked up, you know, whether it's really based on perception. And then my sister starts screaming at me if I even ask a question about her premise. So there's high tension out there, Ken.
There is tension, yes. It's true. Schools aren't, you know, schools are kind of a safe zone. I mean, you don't want to have enforcement. In fact, the federal law prohibits enforcing.
Walmart.
Oh, Walmart's not a safe zone. That's
right,
true.
Right.
No.
So they don't go to Walmart is the point, because they're afraid somebody's going to pick them up. But then again, they would be legal, right, because they were born here.
Sure. Yeah, once a person, yeah, there's no doubt about that. But the question are these that were brought here at a young age and that are not legal, and you know, do we enforce the law there?
Yeah. So this will be a test, trial by fire. We'll see what happens in the courts. But Texas essentially is trying to do what Arizona tried to do in the other issue of enforcement. Now Texas is trying to do the sanctuary city thing. So if anybody wants to have a law that says you can't have sanctuary cities, it would be Texas. And so if they
no state has more border with Mexico, of course, than Texas. Most of our border with Mexico is in Texas. So no state has suffered directly the effects of illegal immigration, and certainly they have a right to cooperate with the federal authorities and be a sanctuary, a sanctuary-free state. No sanctuaries.
Yeah. Well, what do you think is going to happen? Let's say, where are we going to be on immigration in 6 months?
I think, you know, what's coming up is Hispanic Heritage Month, September 15th to October 15th. And that typically every president does something. And we have heard here in Washington that there are efforts to do something related to the Dreamers and do something, obviously, as well as with the funding of the wall. So it has to be a carrot and a stick. There has to be much more enforcement. I think the American people in the election validated that at the ballot box, that they want strict enforcement. And once that's done, even conservatives as vehement on the issue as Ann Coulter have said, once they're convinced we're finally enforcing our laws, well, then we can be a little bit more compassionate with some of these humanitarian cases.
All right, very good. Ken Oliver Mendez, thanks for the update on this. We'll see how it plays out.
Sure, thank you, Mitch.
And appreciate it at the Media Research Center. Take care very much. You know, I'm getting this very disturbing post from a woman on losing her ability to get supplies for diabetes and this whole healthcare thing. I want to talk about that. Also, the football ratings had been going down. Reaction to the players kneeling during the anthem, your thoughts on that, and whether we have free speech or not in this country, and who defines whether you have free speech, which I've got a lot of thoughts about that, on The Mitch Hanks Show, on MadisonTalks.com, and on Facebook Live.
Two Bridges was one of the toughest neighborhoods in New York, especially in the Al Smith projects. It was a no man's land with no rules. On Christmas Eve 1951, Mac Pastamadeo vanished without a trace while walking home with his little boy Angelo. Now 13, Angelo is a gang member and the only witness to the brutal murder of an undercover cop who holds a clue to Mac's disappearance 6 years ago. Stalked by killers, Angelo becomes part of an unlikely alliance of a priest, a mob boss, and a police detective in order to uncover the truth behind the murder and Mac's disappearance. Weepers by Nick Chiarkis.
For nearly two decades, Troy Research has been measuring attitudes and opinions for our clients worldwide. Success is determined by your customers. What do they know that you don't? Ask them. For Sony Motion Pictures, the Green Bay Packers, the Wisconsin Historical Society, Troy Research has asked questions that made decision makers wiser and more successful. Where can good research take your business? Call or email to talk about it. Troy Research, 271-8884. Or email jlittle@troyresearch.com. Talk radio will never be the same. The uncommon sense of Mitch Hank has been unleashed worldwide. This is the all-new Mitch Hank Show.
In real estate, you want to work with Tim Rayl.
When I started Revere Trails out in Windsor, I asked for Tim's advice. I'm absolutely amazed at how much he knows about the development of real estate and the marketing part than other realtors.
Let's get ink on paper today with Realtor Tim Rayl of Coldwell Bankers Success, 698-7653.
He's got a phenomenal knowledge of the product and what it takes to get the product to market.
Tim Rayl, 698-7653.
Need a comedian or MC for your private party or corporate event? Don't be shy. I can do it without telling any dirty jokes. In fact, when I'm not doing my Frank Sinatra tribute show, I've done stand-up at the comedy club and at private events for years. Whether it's a large convention or private gathering in your living room, I've done it. We all need to laugh more. The world can be even more stressful than it is. There's no business like show business, and I usually find those of you who have the best jokes about your coworkers at the company dinner. So feel free to contact me at 347-0374. That's 347-0374. Email at info@madisontalks.com. That's info@madisontalks.com.
Welcome back to the Mitch Hank Show. Mitch seeks the truth by inviting all sides of the issue. Thanks for listening to the Mitch Hank Show.
All right, we talked about healthcare, and this is the stuff that really boggles my mind because we were told during the debate we'd see these people, these healthcare hearings and town halls. Somebody would stand up and say, well, my husband's had five surgeries, and we pay $30 a month, and we don't lose our insurance. And people would scream, and I understand how they would feel. Here's a woman, Jill Nagel, who writes on Facebook based on tonight's show. I'm a 36-year-old single mom of two. Lost my insurance, which was Medicaid, 6 months ago due to me making $1,400 a month. I've been on the pump for many years. Now, the pump, if you're a type 1 diabetic, and my mother was, it regulates your blood sugar levels. I've been on the pump for many years and lost it in March because I couldn't afford pump supplies. My blood sugars have been on the high side for many months, and I don't know what to do to get my supplies, exclamation mark, twice. I have tried getting ACA insurance, but it's $480 a month, and just for me, and I can't afford it. Any help would be appreciated. Jill, I mean, so my point is, what is the point of any of this if you can't get supplies for your pump? Are people saying, Jill, you got to get a shot and just shoot yourself up with insulin every day like they used to? I mean, pumps are expensive. She makes too much money to get Medicaid, so she has to go in the ACA. The ACA is basing their premium at $480 a month based on what she makes. So that formula seems like there are a lot of people that can't afford it. So, you know, people that have insurance through work, have their group insurance, are okay. People who are on Medicaid and qualify for massive subsidies are okay. But people like Jill, who makes too much money apparently, just is screwed. I mean, my mother, I mean, without the pump, forget it. I mean, I dealt with her for many, many decades, and she had a lot of insulin reactions, and God rest her soul, low blood sugars are tough on the family because you always have to get her orange juice or sugar and get her out of it. Sometimes it takes 2 hours to get her out of it in the middle of the night. And she was as strong as a football player when you're trying to get her to drink the juice. She's 5'2", 105. She had the strength of Dick Butkus of the Bears. And if you have high blood sugar level, you could die. So diabetics care more about the high blood sugar level because that's what's more life-threatening. The low stuff, you can always get them out of it with some sugar or orange juice. But this poor woman can't get up. I just don't get it. I know people are doing fine if they can get subsidies and have their own costs be manageable. And other people have their premiums go way up. I know they're going up before we had it, but I just wonder what's going to be the breaking point on this. It seems to be in the last go-around, the people that wanted no change were louder than the people who wanted change. Whether your premiums go up by 116% or not, like in Arizona, that isn't as big a force politically as people that would be losing their coverage. Even though the people that are subsidized heavily because of lack of insurance or lack of income, that's a smaller number of people in the country as a whole. I just don't think people who show up at town halls are going to go to town halls and scream if they have a good job and they have insurance that goes up a lot, but they can still afford it. They're not going to show up. You're going to show up if you're paying $30 a month and your husband had 5 surgeries and you're afraid you're going to lose your insurance. That brings you to the gym. That's one point, and feel free to call us at 210-1667. The other point is 210-1667 on how to solve that. But also on this question of kneeling during the national anthem, I get these emails of patriotic shots of people in the coffins, and they hug their dying loved one in the coffin with a flag draped over from the military and all this touching stuff. And I could never sit or kneel during the anthem. I just couldn't do it. I have too much respect for people who gave their lives and lost limbs fighting for the country, because I never had to fight for the country. So I feel, and every time I speak to a veterans group, I just admit I feel like an idiot. You did all this work and I didn't do it. So I always read this poem, What is a Veteran? Very emotional stuff. But I mean, I feel indebted to them. And I know that Colin Kaepernick was on his knee last year during the anthem, and other people that go on their knee aren't doing it as a means of insulting the military, and they want to fight police brutality or the Nazis or whatever it is. But when you kneel, I mean, the reason people stand during the anthem is usually to honor the military, isn't it? I mean, are your, you know, the good parts about America that you're proud of and people that have died for the flag? I mean, you're singing to the flag, and people have died for the flag in history. So to me, if you're kneeling during the anthem, you can't help but fail to recognize the reason why people sing and stand during the anthem. The other point is, if you have free speech, it's only because your employer says you can do that. The 49ers said it was fine, obviously. They didn't say, no, our players stand. They could have said that. Because Colin didn't own the team. Colin was on the 49ers. They let him do that.
Right.
Now, had he been outside on the sidewalk or in the street marching, nobody could have stopped. He was totally free to do whatever he wants. It really wasn't on his time. It was on San Francisco 49er time. And they said, fine. And actually, part of it was the NFL Players Union contract. They wrote in the contract that the union would protect players who did political protest while in uniform. That was part of their union deal. And the management agreed to it. Okay, fine. Because then, if that's the case, then you couldn't say, you're not going to kneel, we're not going to let you, or you're not going to play, because it would have been a violation of the union agreement, right? But all of that, and the 12 who knelt a couple of weeks ago after Charlottesville, it's hurting ESPN. I mean, the ratings have been going down. ESPN laid off 100 people 6 months ago. And what happens when you do controversial speech is that there's going to be a backlash. People will resist and push back against you if you speak out. That's why a lot of people don't speak out ever. They avoid politics. They avoid controversial things. They send you emails. Please don't ever say who did this email. You know, you've had those disclaimers. So do we have free speech? No, we don't. We've never had free speech. Speech has never been free. Somebody died for it, first of all. Somebody died to make sure that you had the right to do it. Like if we walk down the street and spout off, we can do whatever we want. The government can't arrest us. The government can't jail us for speech unless we're committing espionage, unless we're releasing classified information. But just by sounding off, the government cannot put us in jail. That is free speech. But your employer can fire you.
Yeah.
I mean, we had a sportscaster. You know, we had, well, I don't have to get into the particulars necessarily because it's touchy, but who did a tweet that was considered politically incorrect and lost his job the next day. A recent sportscaster over during the basketball season. You know, if you say things that are politically incorrect, are politically insensitive, controversial, your employer can have you fired. Or the University of Wisconsin can write a letter and saying we don't like this, this offends us, and then you can get fired or whatever the case. So we don't have free speech. And if you're, you know, if you're a powerful football player in a powerful union, you have more freedom than somebody else. But think about your own job, and you may be the most progressive person in the world, the most conservative person in the world. If you say certain things, if you call Trump, okay, let's say you work for IBM. Let's say you work for CUNA, American Family, and you say on some television show you think Trump's a racist, you think Trump's a Nazi. Let's say you're a vice president or you're a sales executive at American Family, and you tell some reporter, yeah, I think Donald Trump's a Nazi. He's a racist. He should be in the Klan. You know, we'll see what your boss says about that the next day. See if you can survive that. One of the reasons why I think certain talk radio hasn't done well is because it's hard to sell time if local businesses don't like the content. And where NPR does very well, NPR has like, what, 12 to 15 million listeners a week. And I consider that educated liberal talk as opposed to militant lefty talk. Militant lefty talk had a short run. I used to be on a station. 92.1, but it was hard to sell it. And I would make sales based on the fact that people knew me from the years before and all this kind of stuff. But when you're screaming about you hate this or hate that or calling people names, calling people racist, sometimes it's hard for small business people who sustain talk radio at the local level to write a check. So speech isn't free. Speech is very expensive, is my point. I hope Colin Kaepernick gets a job. He seems like a nice guy. I think when he wore the Fidel Castro T-shirt, it offended people. No. When he knelt during the anthem, it offended people. And, you know, he did what he did. But now this idea that he somehow deserves a job, he's entitled to a job. Really?
Yeah, no. That's why the ratings have dropped. Nobody cares. No, I mean, people just want
to
watch.
A lot of people don't want to be bothered by it. They don't want to see somebody kneel during the anthem because they were brought up to stand during the anthem.
Yeah, they don't,
care why he's kneeling. They just don't want to see him kneeling.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't go to page two and you complain. Well, they don't know the whole story. They don't know the context. Well, yeah. You can say that 24/7. People don't know the context. People don't go to page two. But no, there is no free speech. And you can exercise it and march and rally and write and go on Facebook all day long. But if you say something that offends your boss, you may not be employed. You're still free to talk the next day on Facebook, but you just might have the same job. When we come back, songs that you wish you could hear on the radio that are never played on the radio. So if you could pick a song that you'd like to have on the radio, what would you like to have us play? You know, that never get played. Here, I got to read this content. Larry Sharp, ooh, that's going to stink. Oh, how about that? I said, you can grill Glenn Grothman. He says, that's going to stink. Oh, that's clever. I've golfed with this guy. Coming back, I got a little end of the night stuff from the Flamingo Hotel 1963 from Bobby Darin. That's classic stuff. And if you're under the age of 80, relax, it's still good. The Mitch Hanks Show on MadisonTalks.com and Facebook Live.
Joe here from Comedy on State. Looking for something to do for your girl's bachelorette party? Trust me, we can take care of that for you. Come to Comedy on State. It's so easy. You can go to madisoncomedy.com. You can purchase your tickets right from the website. You don't even have to talk to anybody over the phone if you're a weird person. Let's be honest, you're probably a weirdo. You're listening to Mitch.
For a list of upcoming Comedy Club performers or to purchase tickets, go to madisoncomedyclub.com and click shows. Performer bios are available by clicking on their pictures.
That's Comedy on State. madisoncomedy.com or 256-0099.
The great Joe DiMaggio still holds the major league record for the longest hitting streak at 56 games. Bucks Takeout Pizza has a 56-year winning streak for the best thin crust pizza in the city. Bucks Pizza has a unique taste like no other. Handmade pizzas with homemade sauce and homemade sausage. Two Madison locations on University Avenue and Cottage Grove Road. Just go to BucksPizzaMadison.com. BucksPizzaMadison.com.
The all-new Mitch Hanks Show would like to thank our sponsors. We're grateful for their support of the all-new Mitch Hanks Show.
At P3 Pro, we're invested in creating a dynamic video experience for our clients. Everything from planning, shooting, and editing your events, commercials, webcasts, or films. P3 Pro has 27 years of industry standard experience working to make your vision a reality. We stand apart from your traditional run-of-the-mill production experience and create memorable, moving, breathtaking imagery that conveys your message in a powerful way. We take your vision and turn it into a work of art. The art of storytelling, the art of beautifully crafted imagery, the art of persuasion. Visit us on the web at p3pro.xyz or call 608-571-3776. That's 608-571-3776.
6 a.m. Marketing is a Wisconsin-based ad agency that doesn't look or act like other ad agencies. They don't follow conventional thinking and constantly push themselves and their clients to test the bounds of how far they can go. The result is relationships that have lasted more than 10 years. Clients refer to 6 a.m. and their work as fresh, insightful, strategic, edgy, and creative. 6 a.m. shows customers why your products and services are better than the competition. 6 a.m.'s brand smart process helps you establish your brand in the market for years to come. With a client's marketing team by its side, 6 a.m. digs for the business problem the client is trying to solve and the business goals and objectives they hope to achieve, examining the market, competitors, the brand's consumers, and messaging to define a brand proposition that is both compelling and unique to the market. 6 a.m. marketing. They do it differently, and they do it well. Go to 6ammarketing.com. That's www.6ammarketing.com.
Welcome to the Mitch Hanks Show, originating four blocks from Wisconsin's capital. Mitch is the radio voice of uncommon sense. All sides of an argument are welcome here. Just be prepared to make one, as Mitch argues for truth, not victory. Politics, lifestyle, pop culture are all on the table. So get ready to participate on the Mitch Hanks Show.
Be sure and check out Brian Beebe's podcast, which he did today at 3 o'clock. It was fantastic, but it's there 24-7 at MadisonTalks.com. Brian Beebe, a great piano bar singer, musician, piano player singer at Sorrento's in Wisconsin Dells. And he's fantastic. He's always here every week on MadisonTalks.com. He sings great songs from the 60s, 70s, and beyond, but he's a human jukebox. He's just tremendous. You know, songs that you never hear on the radio, and that I know they're album-type songs or could be album rock. In my case, I kind of go for the nightclub stuff from back in the day. And I like some of these nightclub performers that no one's ever heard of. Or, you know, people, what, Mike Brockenfeld, our engineer, and under. I mean, you knew who Bobby Darin was, right? I mean, sure. he died before you were born, brother.
Well, the name and some of the songs and all that good stuff.
So
yeah.
you were born in the 80s, right?
Yep, 83, yep.
Well, he died in 73. And I can still remember him on the Flip Wilson show, like the night before he died. Honest to God, he died like a day or two after being on that show. And you never knew. He had this heart condition that they said he was going to live to be 16. He lived to be 37. Mm. But you never could tell when it was going to happen. I mean, he just, you know. And he had a show at the Flamingo Hotel in 1963. So that would be, he was 27. He would be an old 27 because he had Split Splash, I'm Taking a Bath, in 1959. So he would have been, 23 years old. He had this hit. He's from New York. It was a fascinating story because his mother was, or the person he thought was his mother or sister, the person he thought was his sister his entire life, finally admitted to him late in life that she was his mother. And that she didn't know the father because there were several candidates at one point in New York.
Right.
And so he learned that when he was in his 30s, I think.
That's crazy. Yeah.
Great movie, by the way, with Kevin Spacey called Beyond the Sea about Bobby Darin's life. You seen that?
Oh, no.
Fantastic. But I want to play this song. I want to play an interview we did with James Kaplan on the second volume on Sinatra's life after a 10-year project, which I did on WIBA yesterday. But first, Bobby Darin, he's in the Flamingo Hotel in Las Vegas, 1963. It's his last song of the night. And you can hear the glasses clanking in the audience. It's called When the Curtain Falls. Bobby Darin, enjoy. And Brian Beebe, if you're listening to this, just relax. I mean, this, by the way, is his original song. It's End of the Night. Here we go.
That lovely thing he's composing. It says, off comes the makeup, off comes the clown's disguise, the curtain's fallen, the music softly dies, but I hope you're smiling as you're filing out the door. As they say in this biz, that's all there is. There isn't any more. And as the moment ends, I got a funny feeling we're parting now as friends. Your cheers and laughter will linger after they've torn down these dusty walls. If I had this to do again, and the evening were new again, I would spend it with you again, but now the curtain falls. Your cheers and laughter will linger after they've gone down people say I was made for this. Nothing else would I trade for this. And just think I get paid for this.
Good night, ladies and gentlemen. God love you.
Is that amazing? Is he a giant? Or was he? I get paid for this. Good night, ladies and gentlemen. Bobby Darin, 1963, Flamingo Hotel. I can't get this note I'm getting from Sean Preble. I want to talk to you about this during the break. And then we'll come back. I'm going to play this interview if I can here with James Kaplan. But don't go away. The Mitch Hanks Show on MadisonTalks.com and Facebook Live.
This is Pete Gunderson. Pre-planning a life celebration doesn't necessarily mean prepaying. At Gunderson Funeral and Cremation Care, we offer a variety of affordable options that you can pre-arrange for free. It's pre-planning without the worry of prepaying. Learn more at GundersonFH.com, your hometown life celebration center.
Gunderson Funeral Home.
If you operate a business, you know there is no one-size-fits-all solution for today's technology challenges. MadisonGeeks.com plans, services, and installs technologies for small and medium businesses like network systems, servers, firewalls, wireless access points, telecommunications, security, remote service options, and business productivity solutions. MadisonGeeks.com is your IT staff. They take time to sit down and discuss your needs and present cost-effective solutions. With a Better Business Bureau A-plus rating, they are your trusted IT outsource partner. Expect less downtime. Faster resolutions lead to more productivity. Fewer day-to-day issues. Their proactive maintenance helps prevent issues from occurring. MadisonGeeks.com also offers computer and laptop service and repair. Madison Geeks are there to help. They're known for their candid, friendly approach and reliable, ready response. Check them out online at MadisonGeeks.com.
This is the all-new Mitch Hanks Show.
When it comes to telephone on-hold advertising, some commonly asked questions are, why do we need an on-hold message? How do we write a script? How long should the message be? How does the message get played? How much does it cost? I'm Bob of Abella Creative Services, and a telephone on-hold message speaks directly to your target audience while they're on hold with your company. Continuously advertises only your business without the clutter of competitive ads and for just a fraction of conventional advertising costs. At Bob Abella Creative Services, we'll help you draft a well-written script, provide the appropriate announcer, music, or sound effects, and the studio time and expertise to put it all together. We'll also provide you with any special equipment you might need to play your on-hold message. Even though we probably have more experience than most other on-hold message companies, we'll cost you less. Let Bobabella Creative Services stretch your advertising dollar with an on-hold message that provides your customers with real, actionable solutions to their problems. Bobabella Creative Services gets results. Just send us an email at bacsgetsresults@gmail.com. That's bacsgetsresults@gmail.com. Mitch Hank for Atterbury, Cameron, Haig.
I'm proud to be sitting next to senior partner and a man who's been voted Wisconsin's super lawyer multiple times, Eric Haig. How big or how small a case will you take on?
I've helped all sorts of people over the years, from very small cases up to multi-million dollar cases. We do try to be selective in the cases that we handle as a matter of economics and devoting the proper time that I can to a case. We do advise some people that if their case is small enough, they may be better off handling it themselves. Not everyone needs a lawyer. Sometimes it's not in their best interest to have a lawyer, and I've told many people over the years that your case is of modest enough value that I think you're better off handling this yourself. So it's only when we think we can make a meaningful difference in the outcome for them that we're willing to accept their case.
So when you need a lawyer, do what I did. Call Atterbury, Cameron, Haig and reach them at yourwisconsininjurylawyers.com. That's yourwisconsininjurylawyers.com.
Welcome back to the Mitch Hanks Show. Mitch seeks the truth by inviting all sides of the issue. Thanks for listening to the Mitch Hanks Show.
All right, James Kaplan, I interviewed him. I was on WIBA yesterday, and we're not violating copyright, I don't believe, because we're not on the radio, so we're on a podcast. But James Kaplan, who wrote two volumes on the life of Frank Sinatra over 10 years, one Frank the Voice, one Sinatra the Chairman. This has been on the second book, and we'll go to it now from WIBA yesterday, James Kaplan.
Now more blue-collar common sense with Dan Connery on WIBA.
And Mitch Hank in for Dan Connery one more day here on WIBA. My next guest is a fascinating and wonderful author, James Kaplan, who spent 10 years of his life writing two major volumes on Frank Sinatra. The first one, Frank the Voice, which I read. And the second one, I can't believe I haven't read it, but I will read it soon. Sinatra the Chairman. Hello, Mr. Kaplan.
Hello, Mitch.
You know, Sinatra still matters. Not to quote your colleague Pete Hamill with the book Sinatra Still Matters, but he does matter. You know, you see him on commercials. His voice is everywhere. Even millennials recognize him when I have it in my car. They go, oh, yeah, that's good. I like that.
Yeah.
I mean, what is it about Frank that endures?
Well, that's why it took me 10 years to write two books. There's a lot to talk about, but it is a voice. We can try to explain it, Mitch, and we can talk about his phrasing and his breath control and his incomparable mastery of the lyrics of these songs. But when it comes down to it, there's just this X factor about Sinatra's voice that raises the little hairs on your arms and on the back of your neck and keeps people listening. And I think we'll keep people listening for a long, long time to come.
Well, I've seen people do great spot-on impressions of Sammy Davis and Dean Martin. But I've never heard anybody sound like Frank because of those pipes, the depth of his tones. Nobody can imitate him.
It's been tried, and you can caricature him, but the caricatures have been mostly visual. Phil Hartman on SNL did a great job of it, and of course, Joe Piscopo went even further. But they are caricatures, and Sammy Davis himself used to try to imitate Frank.
Right.
He sounded a lot like Sammy Davis.
Right, exactly. It doesn't work. I mean, Fred Travel, you know, did a good speaking voice of Frank, but nobody could do the singing voice. Anyway, but you said in an interview I watched, he had this amazing faculty for making you believe he was thinking and feeling the lyric at the moment he was singing it.
It was great acting. It was nothing short of great acting. And again, it was his love of those beautifully crafted songs of all the geniuses of the great American songbook. His love of those composers, of those lyricists, and his deep study of those songs before he ever sang a note that allowed him to be so in the moment.
And there are critics, and I've talked to some people who sing in bars and sing quite well, that say he was just talking or he wasn't any good after the early 60s. I don't agree. I think he had a lot of breath later. And I enjoy those songs like Cycles late and the Rod McEwen stuff. I'm a big fan. But he had range. He had breath in those days. He, you know, during the 80s, he started to lose it. Maybe you agree or disagree. I don't know what your thoughts are there.
Well, after Frank retired for about a minute and a half in 1971, he came back as a pure concert artist. Before, he was a guy who made movies. He made a lot of records. He made a lot of movies. After 1973, after he came back, he was a guy who was mostly on the road. And there are millions of people around the world who saw him in concert from 1973 up until his last concert in February of 1995. And an awful lot of people were very, very thrilled with hearing Frank in concert. He had good nights, he had bad nights.
Right.
Starting in the 80s, he started to lose it a little bit. It's true. He started to forget lyrics. The breath began to... He never treated his own body very well. He's the guy who smoked two packs of cigarettes a day, who drank a fifth of Jack Daniels every day. It doesn't do wonders for the voice. But despite all of it, he persisted. He endured.
I saw him in 87 November. He was 71, I believe, just for his 72nd birthday. Did a good show. Didn't miss a note. Again, he couldn't carry him as long or as high, but he was on. His pitch was good, and it was still. But my parents obviously remembered a younger man, but I thought it was still a fine performance.
He was still Sinatra. I saw him in '80 at Carnegie Hall, and he just took over that great hall and wowed everybody in the place, including me.
I have that on video, at least one of the shows from that tour on video. And with New York, New York, you were probably a part of it. There was an instantaneous standing ovation on that.
Yes. From the first time he sang that song at Radio City Music Hall, it became a sensation, became a signature song. And how great that, in my opinion anyway, how great that it superseded My Way, which I think is a much lesser song.
Right, which he didn't really like much. And I saw him say a profane thing about Strangers in the Night off mic in the... in the concert to the Americas in '82. Yeah. He said, worst blanking song I've ever heard. You can hear him say it. He holds the mic away.
Yeah.
It's the 73 album, Old Boys Is Back. I thought he had wonderful range and great breath on that.
Yes, he had a lot left in the tank. He had a lot left in the tank for a long time. And even at the very end, it was the molecules that made him Sinatra, that made him worth listening to and looking at.
You focus on the music. A lot of authors focus on the mob and the fistfights and the drinking and the women, which you know you really can't divorce from his life. But he, he was investigated by the FBI for like 50 years. And did they ever find anything on him that was rose to the level of criminality?
Not especially. He had some unfortunate acquaintances, and this takes some explaining, but he grew up Italian-American in the 1920s and 30s, and Italian-Americans were much looked down on then. He began to run into these guys who ran the nightclubs he performed in, and he idolized them. Like a small boy, much as a small boy idolizes cowboys or football player Sinatra idolized the mob guys, and it was an unfortunate thing, but that was Sinatra.
There were some myths out there, or maybe they weren't myths. His nemesis Lee Mortimer tried to write once that the day Sinatra left the Rustic Cabin Club to go with Harry James was the day he was going to get fired from the Rustic Cabin. Have you read that?
I never read that. I never heard that before.
And the other thing about the $40,000 to pay off the doctors to keep him out of the war, that was a Walter Winchell rumor. I read the Sinatra files when they were released, the last batch, and the FBI officially said it was a perforated eardrum. There was nothing about a $40,000 bribe.
And I believe it's true. I believe he genuinely had a perforated eardrum, but that did not go down well in the America, in the intensely patriotic America of the early years of World War II.
No, especially with the GIs.
Yes. William Manchester, the great author of World War II history about the South Pacific, said that Sinatra was the most hated man in the armed forces. But they listened to him anyway.
Well, Norman Lear said in the HBO special that he was a loathed figure, and so that he corroborates that. The slump, I have to ask you about the slump, because people think it was the mob. Some people do, got him the pardon from Here to Eternity, and you dispute that in your work.
The mob did not get him the pardon from Here to Eternity.
Right.
There was no horse's head in any producer's bed. It was Ava Gardner who got Frank the pardon from Here to Eternity by going to the head of Columbia Pictures, Harry Cohn, and telling Harry Cohn that she would give Harry Cohn a picture for free if Harry Cohn would give Frank a screen test. And Harry Cohn looked Ava Gardner up and down, the most beautiful woman in the world, and thought, well, what else might she give him for free? He gave Sinatra the screen test, and Eli Wallach, who also did an amazing screen test, decided to do a play on Broadway instead of the movie, and the rest is history.
You spoke with Tina Sinatra, one of the daughters, and tell me how that went, because you maintained your independence, but it was not without some testy moments, right?
Well, I met with Tina Sinatra after my first volume came out, and the book had been optioned for the movies. And Tina Sinatra was part of that team that was potentially going to make a movie about Sinatra, and therefore I met with Tina Sinatra. She is a beautiful woman, a fiery woman, intensely protective of her father's legacy, and she was, I think, forgivably defensive about her father and about my book. She was a little prickly about the book, and at the same time, she looked me in the eye and she said, "Well, you got the music right." And I thought, I took that as the highest form of flattery.
And you complimented her book, My Father's Daughter, whereas other authors who did more of the mob hit piece stuff, and quoting fourth-hand sources on the Familiar Attorney stuff, disavowed her book and sided with Nancy on some late disputes over his meds.
Well, that's a complicated matter. I talked with Tina about her father's meds. I talked with her about a lot of those things. I thought she wrote a terrific book. I thought her book rang of the truth on every page.
I did too, and nobody cares what I think, but I agree with you on that. And this other book I'm talking about was Tabloid with a capital T. And I wish we had more time, but the Rat Pack too, as you mentioned, you know, they wasn't always peaches and cream or hunky dory. They kind of went in different directions at times.
Yeah, I'm no fan of the Rat Pack. To my mind, the Rat Pack was naughtiness in Las Vegas circa 1960. It doesn't hold up well. You look at it now, the views on women, on alcohol, and especially on race are antiquated. A lot of it is painful to watch.
Right.
And the truth is, it was Frank's scene. The other guys were kind of following along. And Frank was a guy who tried to be funny on stage, but never really brought
nope,
it off.
Nope, he really wasn't.
Dean Martin was the genius comedian of the Rat Pack. The Rat Pack was a little artificial confection that retains a mysterious power still for a lot of people.
Well, the 65 show of the Isthmus House or Dismas House in St. Louis still holds up pretty well. It's the only film of the 60s of the Rat Pack, but you're right. I mean, the jokes about Sammy are wincing and the rest. But,
yeah.
You know, fascinating stuff. I wish we had more time. The first book, Frank, The Voice. Second book, Sinatra, The Chairman. James Kaplan, 10 years of his life. You did a great job, sir. I really appreciate it. And I'm a Frankophile myself, so...
Thank you so much, Mitch, and it's a great pleasure to speak with you today.
All right, well, hey, thank you, and I hope you all enjoy these books.
Yeah, it's great stuff. I read the first one, The Voice, and The Voice takes you through 1954, the Academy Award, which actually came 4 months after Sinatra tried to kill himself over Ava Gardner with turning on the gas on the stove. Back in a time when he was at the bottom of his career during the slump, and he had to borrow cash from Jimmy Van Heusen's pocket to go out. Thank God there was no bill or no tab at a bar in New York where Sinatra would go. Not Jilly's, but another famous bar owner. In fact, at one point he walked down the street where the booze was hitting him. He didn't know where he was, and it was like 20 degrees. And he was kind of stammering and wandering, and a cop put a flashlight in his face and said, "Are you Sinatra?" 4 months after that, he gets the Academy Award for From Here to Eternity. So he goes back on top from that very dark place in the bottom of his career. Fascinating stuff. We thank WIBA for that because we did the interview while co-hosting, or actually guest hosting for Dan Conry's show. So we hope it's cross-promotion for that. You can get it also on WIBA.com or MadisonTalks.com and hear this show. By the way, you know, the water's fine for your own podcast. Brian Beebe, we mentioned, did one at 3 o'clock, and it's on 24/7, MadisonTalks.com. And do your own show, Axe to Grind, Book to Write, Cause to Promote, and you can do it here. Mike Brockvelt, we thank you as the engineer for this broadcast as you head back into the beautiful oasis of the Fox Valley after the show.
Yeah.
The southernmost point, right? Is that fair to say?
Yep.
Fond du Lac.
The bottom of the lake.
The bottom of the lake. We thank Bob Keller, the Keller Real Estate Group, for the space here on West Washington Avenue. Check out the Keller properties. at KellerRealEstate.com. You've got Washington Court, Tuscan Place, all these great places on the west side for seniors, Whitcomb Square. Go to KellerApartments.com, KellerApartments.com, and check it out. Coming up after this show on this website, MadisonTalks.com, check it out, Bob Abella, The Wide World of Radio, radio back in the classic days in the 30s, 40s, Burns and Allen, Jack Benny, Frank Sinatra, Al Jolson, it's all there. Thank you so much. I'll see you next week on the Mitch Hank Show on MadisonTalks.com and Facebook Live.